Deborah, thank you so much for having us here. I can tell you it is a real privilege. And I know
very
that
nice
you don't
to have
do
you
this
here
for
the garden. No, I never do it.
And you clearly we've met some of your extraordinary animals here, the horses. We didn't quite get to meet the pig, but we saw where
he was fast asleep. He was doing what pigs do best, wasn't he? Having a lovely snooze in his pig house.
Oh, and we've seen the chickens and the ducks and the geese. The aggressive
three
geese.
Very angry geese.
And, well, have you always been an animal person, an animal lover? How did that come about?
You see, I always have. It's funny. I was talking to my sister about it today, and she and I sort of take. She's very kind, and she's got her horses, and she loves her animals. But we were talking about. I don't know where it came from, but I have just even as a very very small child, I was saving snails. You know, I had a snail hospital because we had thrushes. Thrush would be smashing their
right
shells, and I'd pick them up and put them underneath this. It was a plank, basically. But I called it a snail hospital. So I've always, always loved animals, and I have no idea where it came from. My parents are kind people, but they're not huge animal lovers. There's nothing in my background that would really say why. But, you know, they've just always been kind of the centre of my focus of my life, really.
And how has that come out in your contemporary life? I know that you're involved with animal charities, and you're very careful about the food that you choose. Tell us more about how you live your life in an animal friendly way, if you like.
Well, I think it's quite easy for me to completely understand the system when you've actually got animals around you. You know, I look at my animals. I mean, they have a really lovely life. A lot of them are rescued. But I also understand that's, you know, I'm afraid, gets rarer and rarer in life. You know, my sheep, they will just live their lives out eating grass and wandering around, as will the pigs. You know, they'll do it. But, of course, that becomes rarer and rarer. So I'm kind of reminded on a daily basis of what is going on in the outside world, and in the farming and in the wildlife and the way we're protecting our environment. And I'm quite lucky for that, because I think that it could so easily be that I was, you know, there was a time in my life when I was really too busy for it. You know, I was just doing what I was doing. I was earning my money. I was making my life. And I wasn't able to spend the time looking around and really thinking about things. Because I've got this theory. Most people care if they know, you know, and I'm lucky enough to know now. You know, I know, I understand the farming systems, I understand the wildlife issues, I understand the environmental issues, and I've got the time to do that. But actually, when you've got your head down and you're just working, it's a thing that you're kind of aware of, but you haven't really got the time to deal with, and it's such a big issue as well. Yeah. So anyway, on my, you know, what I try to do, I try to live my life. I don't feel you should ever believe one thing and ignore, you know, if you know something and you believe it and you feel strongly about it, then you should bring that into your life and live your life accordingly.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very careful about, you know, what I eat, where I eat. You know, I have rules. My poor husband has to put up with new rules every week. Cause every week I find something else that I think, oh no, quails. I hadn't even thought about quails. I love quails eggs. You know?
Yeah.
So, he's my diet's getting ever more interesting. Please don't tell me potatoes feel pain. That'll be the end of it. But so yes, I like to find organizations that, I feel are effective within, you know, within the framework of the concerns and the worries that I'm aware of. I like to feel, you know, not just money, but give my time to organisations that I feel are actually getting it. I'm getting it in a forward-thinking way, in an effective way, because you know, there's no point telling everybody to stop eating meat. That isn't going to happen. People are going to eat meat. So, you know, we need to be a bit more progressive than that. We need to say, OK, so we're going to. How are we going to make sure that the animals have got a high standard of welfare?
No. And what do you feel are the things which prevent people from knowing what's going on, say, with factory farming? In this sort of digital age with social media, you know, with TV that you know, it's got so many channels, so there are often documentaries on available and so on and so forth. Daily Mail often picking up on these issues. what is it that's getting in the way of more people knowing more about it?
I'm not sure that it's more people knowing. I think it's more people wanting to tackle it. Because we get a lot of information thrown at us all of the time about many different things. We actually then have to choose which ones we're going to engage one and which ones we're going to take in and actually do something about. And actually, the truth is that some of the awful facts are really not very nice to look at. You know, they're really not very nice to have to deal with. And therefore, if you've got lots of other things going on in your life or other things to worry about, I think what gets in the way is people thinking, I don't really want to deal with that now.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's lack of information about there. We've got to be careful the way it's presented.
Yeah.
And we've also got to be careful about people feeling like, yes, but what can I do? Because there's nothing more frustrating than being told there's an issue and then not being shown a way to help and make a difference. So, you know, I think that's where the block comes, because otherwise it just becomes a blipvert of information that people see, they go, that's awful, and then somebody else tells them something else and they go, oh, that's awful too. But then they're not left with a legacy that makes them feel like, actually, I want to change what I do here.
Yeah.
The biggest question I get asked on Twitter, you know, when I show people something, great, what can I do? Mm. You know, it's because nobody wants to feel constantly helpless.
Mm.
You know, no, but that's just a horrible feeling. And actually, if you're made to feel constantly helpless, then you actually think, something I can do about it. I'm going to go and look at something else. I'm going to do something I can do. You know, so I think the whole map to here's a better way of doing things is really important.
And thinking about in the shops, I know that you have an interest in labelling. You know, Compassion has a campaign called Labelling Matters that we do with the Soil Association, RSPCA, and a whole bunch of others. So we've amassed this coalition, and we're trying to get the way that the food is produced, the method of production, on the label. And what's your view on that, and how beneficial do you think that could be?
Well, for a start, it needs cleaning up. I think, you know, I think a lot of the labelling systems started with great intentions, but were a little sort of disparate. Mm. So there wasn't one big body that said, OK, these are the important things we need to know about our food, and therefore this is the labelling system. So it's kind of grown up with people thinking, you know, OK, well, we'll add a cruelty-free thing here, and then we'll add organic. And actually, I'm not quite sure what organic means. Does that mean free range? I don't know, free, you know, so there is this little bit of confusion about what it is. So I think there does need to be an awareness campaign in terms of, what is it important now to label? Because it does change, you know, people are becoming much more concerned about sugar's one of them. You know, welfare is another. You know, we want to be able to make those choices. But you also can't have a product that's just got nothing but a load of labels sticking on
it. Exactly.
So I think that, you know, there needs to be what's important to be on there, what actually matters to people now. Where can they find that information out? If I can't put it on here, because I can't, because, you know, there isn't enough space to deal with everything, how do we actually get that information across to people? And I think that that's where the retailers can have got a... I think it's people's choice. If they want to know, at the moment, I'm not sure they know where to go. Mm. You know, you'd have to sit down for an afternoon and Google organic, free range, red tractor. You know, you'd have to try to work it out for yourself, what it is on each of your products. I think if you could say in a supermarket, if you're interested, this is what each of these labels means, then it gives the consumer choice.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, if you were, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night and you think about animal welfare issues, what would you say are the sort of the three things which occur to you as the things which, if you could wave a magic wand, you would have them stopped?
Well, I think live export would be one, and I'm talking worldwide. You know, some of the horrendous. I was in Australia when some of those awful images of those bulls that were exported over to Indonesia, was it?
I think it was could Indonesia. Could have been Indonesia. They go to Middle East, Libya.
Yeah, but some of the. I mean, I was actually on a ranch at the time. The poor man, he didn't know what had hit him.
Right.
So worldwide, I think live export is crucial. I think. When I think about our animals, I worry about... There's two things I worry about. The life they live and the way they die. Mm. And respect in the way animals are slaughtered, to me, is hugely important. I think... So I welcome CCTV in slaughterhouses. I think that there should be more slaughterhouses. I think it's ridiculous that the farmer down the road here has to send their animals. It's the same as live export, you know, having to load them up, their last journey, hundreds of miles to take them to a slaughterhouse. It's crazy. So I think that's really important. If you asked me, the single biggest issue is population. That's it, you know, and we're not, you know, it's a difficult one to talk about. But the truth is, there are already too many people on this planet, and in a minute there'll be far, far too many people on this planet. You know, this it's an amazing place. This, you know, it's amazing to be able to cope with the stuff we chuck at it now. But it's going to get to a point where the Earth just says, "I can't do this anymore." You know, yeah. And we're just better than that. We are better than driving into a brick wall. Surely we can see it. Surely we can say, actually, we don't want to do that.
I so agree. And then you've got the equation, which is more people, more consumption. And we know that one of the most resource-heavy things to consume is factory-farmed meat. What would you say to the average consumer, the average family, what we can do to help?
Well, I actually think it starts earlier than that. I do think, I don't know, because I don't even have children. I don't have children, so I don't deeply understand the education system, but I have spoken to several teachers who do not have climate change on their agenda, and they do not have nutrition on their agenda, so that they kind of believe that whatever they're eating is right, because that's the only model they've got. I do think that we need to teach very, very early on, obviously about climate change, but also about food nutrition. There is a misunderstanding, you know, that eating 80% of meat in our diet is good. It's not good. You know, we need to understand actually it's not good. In fact, eat less and eat better.
And you're not saying that from a vegetarian perspective?
No. I'm a meat eater. I'm an omnivore.
Yeah.
I eat meat. I'm fortunate to be able to say I only want to eat free range. I only eat free range, and I will not eat anything. If you care about something, voice it. Because if you don't say it to a restaurant will have no idea that it matters to you whether or not something is well-reared. And I always ask. So I, for instance, I've supported British Veal, because if we don't want the male calves to go over to, you know, live export, then we need a market for them here. So I support British Veal, and I always go into a restaurant. If there's veal on the menu, I don't actually eat veal, but I go on the menu and I say, is that British Veal? You know, and if it's not, I'll explain why it makes a difference to me. So I always say to people, say it. If you think it, say it. Because the power, it's funny, it only takes 3 or 4 people to make a comment for a restaurant to think, oh, I didn't know that was an issue. Doesn't need that many voices, because you're kind of, nobody else is saying anything. So 4 people saying something makes it sound like, you know, it's a noisy statement. So always say it. And I always do. It doesn't even matter whether I'm going to drink the thing or eat the thing. I just say, is that free range?
Fantastic.
And when they say, I don't know, I say, well, you should. What I do, I also know, is very valuable. You know, I can add those bits. It would be nice to be able to say, well, I've saved this, I've changed that, or whatever. But I'd like to feel that I'm part of the bigger change. I'm a tiny little part of the bigger change. That's enough for me.
Fantastic. Well, I think that you're far too modest. You've got a big voice for change, not least on social media. But I guess, final question, if you can allow me a frivolity of a question, one that's actually very important to my wife. Strictly Come Dancing.
Do you know, I've been in business for 35 years and everybody wants to know about Strictly.
Exactly, yes. Tell me, how was it?
Amazing. It is as lovely. Do you know what I love about Strictly? Things aren't, in the media, things are not always what they seem. Dragon's Den is, I'm a very... It matters to me that things are authentic. I do not like, it's why I'm really not a media. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a media person, because I just like things to be as they are. Dragons is very authentic. Strictly is very authentic. It is as lovely as you see. Everybody wants you to be they want you to look your best. They want you to feel your best. They want you to be your best. And all of the other people you're competing against, they are rooting for you. And I just felt like when I was dancing, I'm terrified every step of the way. I've never been so. Nothing scares me. Strictly scared me. I felt that the audience, if they could have, they would have picked me up and carried me around. You know, everybody wants a lovely thing for you. Do you know, that's rare in life. It's very rare that genuinely everybody wants, in a competitive environment, everybody wants the best for you, even your competitors, you know, and those at the end, those, oh, I was really upset somebody. That's true. You know, you get really close, you come together. No, I loved it. I had a ball. I spent 10 weeks completely out of my comfort zone. I'm thinking, getting up every day thinking, what on earth? How did this happen to me? What have I let myself in for?